This is Bill Tiller of Tiller.org. You're listening.
Hello, everybody. It's another Tuesday on my island, anyway, where genealogy and spirit connect. Being a steel drummer, I thought I would have a little intro music that kind of takes care of my one of my other lives, anyway. Got an interesting show for you today, and hope you stay with us. I do want to let you know that we do have a toll-free number on 888-815-9756, and I hope you have a lot of questions for my guest today. Yes, it is another Tuesday, and I tell you what, we've got 14, 15 shows under the belt, and every one of them seems to be better than the next. Want to welcome everybody again to Where Genealogy and Spirit Connect. I'm Susan King, and my guest today is the marketing director for Footnote.com. For those of you who do plan on starting a spiritual journey of doing your own genealogical research, this is one of the main places that will really help you locate some important information. Having been doing research now for some 27 years and having started with hand-cranked microfilms at the Family History Library in Salt Lake, Utah, the things that are bound for all of us today on the Internet through companies like Footnote.com is absolutely incredible. Birth certificates, death records, I mean, things that you would have to wait weeks and weeks and weeks to get are becoming more and more and more available, and it's mind-boggling the problems that and challenges that you can solve with your research in just a few short minutes. My guest, as I said, is Justin Schroefer. He is the marketing director of Footnote.com. And he has a long history of being in the genealogy business, and he is currently in charge of all things marketing for Footnote.com, and including the branding and channel development and messaging development. He has an MBA degree from the David Eccles School of Business and a BS in marketing, business marketing from the University of Utah. Justin, welcome.
Thanks, Susan. It's good to be here.
It is. I've been watching, I guess, over these many years, all the developments going on in all areas of genealogy, and some of the things that Footnote.com has been doing, really, I guess, in the past year has been very mind-boggling, too. So, you know, what I wanted to do is maybe kind of start off and have you give the audience an introduction of what you all are doing and what you've done and a little bit of the history, and then we can move on from there.
That sounds good. Well, Footnote.com has been around for about 2.5 years, and we basically started in January of 2007 where we signed a partnership with the National Archives, and which ended up being a fantastic event for us. It allowed us to work together with them to digitize content that's never been on the Internet before. And as you know, the National Archives has billions of records, so we've got a lot of work ahead of us, but it's been a great start to work together with them and with other other archives and libraries from around the country. And we're putting that content up on Footnote, but it's a little bit different from other sites. You'll notice by being on Footnote, there's going to be some other records on there that aren't necessarily genealogy-oriented. We're more of a history website, but the records that we have on there end up being a huge resource for genealogists. So we have census documents, we have naturalizations, we have those kind of documents that are more aligned with what genealogists are researching, but we also have records that genealogists might not necessarily readily think of, and they end up being a fantastic resource. And we're talking about anything from like an FBI case files to different type of military records. And so we've been putting those up on the site. About we have, I think, almost 60 million images right now. We're at about 58, and we put about 1 million new images on the site every month. So we're trying to move as quickly as we can. And more than just being a record repository, we've put tools on the site that allow people to add their own contributions and get in touch with other people that might be interested in the same subject or people. And I think that's what really makes it stand out is what we've learned in working with genealogists and on websites is that the more you can bring people and other content together, it's like putting pieces of a puzzle together, and the more pieces you have, the more complete that picture ends up looking. And so that's what the premise behind the site was, is get some good content and allow people to add their own contributions, and that's where the fun can begin.
Well, it's a fun site to be on. I've done a little bit, and I think I do have one site that I've put up for me. But I'm finding that more and more I'm having an issue doing my own genealogy again, and I find this very intriguing. That I go through phases of doing my own and then helping others do theirs. So it's been kind of interesting. On the member discovery section, which, kind of interests me a great deal, because I've always felt that the more people could collaborate together, the more information that, really could be made available. And I'm going to say this, and I'm going to preface it, too, by that all of us who are doing genealogy research, whether we're trying to trace our own family or just trace a piece of our family, or to try to find out a historical note about a family member, that sometimes generationally information gets passed on to different lines. And amazingly enough, that your line may not have the information, but when you connect with the second, third, or fourth cousin, bingo, there's the family Bible, there's the information on where the family came from. It's really an amazing process. So on the member discoveries, what kind of things are members allowed to do?
Well, they basically, there's two sides of it. There's what they can do with the content that we're putting up on the site, and they're able to do, they're able to make annotations to documents. And that ends up being very valuable, because if they find something on a document that hasn't been necessarily indexed, then what they can do is they can actually make an annotation box over that and basically categorize that as a person or a fact or whatever it might be. And that gets added to our search database. So
next
time somebody is searching for something, that particular document will show up in the search results. Now, that's actually been valuable. So, for instance, if you happen to have a record for an ancestor or for somebody that includes within that record set maybe a testimonial of a neighbor or of an acquaintance, whether it be for a pension file or a land grant, whatever it might be, by having that name annotated in the document, then somebody else is able to, find a document about their ancestors that normally wouldn't have been easily found. So we allow people to do annotations. We allow them to add comments to a document, not doing anything specifically to the original document, but attaching their comments. They can even attach or connect different records on our site. So if you were to find a census document in our 1930 census for an ancestor, and you also found, say, for instance, their naturalization record, well, you can connect those two images together. And so, again, you'll have that for yourself, but anybody else that might be coming in researching that particular ancestor now has found an additional piece of information where they've basically been able to utilize somebody else's work off of that. So we allow people to do those kind of things. We allow them to make their own pages about an ancestor and basically attach any photo or records and add stories. A timeline's created, just a real fun way to engage with it. And then we allow our members to upload any content that they might have. And that's all, a free service. They can upload to their heart's content. But it's like you said, there's some things that have been passed down on certain lines. We call them shoeboxes of content, shoeboxes of information. Everybody has basically that shoebox of a photo or a record, a letter maybe, just up there in their closet in a shoebox. And we're trying to get everybody to get those out and to scan them and to upload them to, to Footnote, where they, again, have a backup copy in case should anything happen to those originals, but also to allow people to find that information as well and do things with them. So it's really exciting to see, people coming in and not only basically pulling from what we've been putting on there, but actually putting stuff onto the site to add so much more value and information out there that normally is just again, hidden in closets elsewhere. So the more you can get out there, the more discoveries are going to happen, and our members are really taking off with that.
As far as percentage, what is the percentage of information, what is the growth of the percentage of information that users are adding to the site? Over the last period of time? I mean, if you've got 60 million records and, you take a percentage, I mean, how much data, are people really adding to the site? I'm really curious myself.
That's a good question. I mean, I don't have a percentage.
Okay.
We're adding, like I said, 1 million images a month, so that's actually fairly aggressive. But if you, going to our site, you'll notice on, the member discoveries, that stuff is being uploaded almost on a constant basis. In fact, I'm looking at it right now, and there was one that was added 5 seconds ago about a story for somebody in Gettysburg. And, so these type of contributions are happening almost constantly on our site. And so the more that, basically we spread the word about Footnote and let people know, hey, this is, a free service for uploading that you can do and creating these pages or, making any type of contribution, that the more that word gets out, the more members will have come to the site, and basically it just kind of grows exponentially at that point.
It certainly does, and I mean, I have the shoeboxes, and it's really, when you start researching back when I did, and I guess, Justin, I hate to admit it's almost 27 years now, I've got file cabinets full of shoeboxes, and one of these days, I've got to find some time to do my share of the uploading, I guess. It's really sad. But, for those who are just starting out, I think, too, these are wonderful opportunities, to get things out at the beginning and not get into a position like I am where the process becomes overwhelming to even think about where to start. It's really kind of funny. Now, when you put together a page, is there any type of email system that alerts you that something new's been added of interest to you, or
absolutely?
Or is that something?
Whenever you put a contribution on the site and somebody makes either a comment about what you've done or added something else, you'll be notified. Now, they're not going to have your email address, per se, but what we do is we notify you to let you know, hey, something's happened to a bit of content that you're either watching or have contributed. So it's a great notification system. It's a great way to put out feelers out into the community to see if there's anybody out there that might be researching the same people or have more information. Message boards has been a great resource in the past, but what we've tried to do is take it a little bit further by you adding your content to the site. We've now made it where it can be searchable on major search engines like Google. So, for instance, if you were to create a footnote page for an ancestor and happen to have some information on there, those pages index in Google very, very well. And so basically when somebody types in a name in Google, which we have found a lot of genealogists do, that's sometimes their first point of searching is to go to Google and see what's out there, then these pages that have been created on Footnote are sometimes the first result that will come up or, one of the first results that are there. And so, again, it's a means of being able to create some content on Footnote and then basically have that not only accessible to everybody that's on Footnote, but to the broader market, to people that are actually using Google and things of that type. So we've done some, technology on our site to allow that to happen, and it's really been useful. In fact, there was somebody here at our office that just came in very excited yesterday and basically said that his mother was working on Footnote and had uploaded some content about an ancestor, and she just recently got contacted by a gentleman who is a removed cousin that she had no idea who this person was, but he found some content. I think he had searched on Google, found it on Footnote, and then was able to contact her directly and basically say, hey, I've got some more information about this person. So that's the exact type of experience that we're trying to create here, and we're seeing that happen, and we just know that it's going to continue to grow.
Yeah, that's really exciting. I didn't realize that. Obviously, if you're not putting up pages, you wouldn't know. But that is an exciting way, because being a genealogist, that is exactly the first thing you do. is you just, you know, Google them to see what is out there. You know, and then you know, go to sites like yours, some of the other major genealogy sites. Now, something of interest that I noted just recently, and is that there are links to a lot of your documents on FamilySearch.org.
Yes, we have worked together with them on even digitizing some of the collections that we've had.
Okay.
But we've tried to partner with a lot of different sites to where we can actually get it, whether it be links or our indexes out to other sites. So we're again trying to work together with other genealogy companies to you know, basically be more of an open environment to where people can find different things and avoid anything that they put on our site. For instance, they could actually have links on our site that might point to different sites as well that they might have hosted information, whether it be on a wiki, on a blog, or, you know, simply that they found on another genealogy website. So we want to make sure this is a very open environment so that, you know, all this information can come together in one place where people then can look for additional information.
And in fact, I
should mention that we've actually broadened that concept even further to where we're trying to get into channels or websites where a lot of people are present and a lot of people are talking and connecting with their families, and Facebook is a good example of that.
Sure.
And what we did is we actually created, so these footnote pages that you find and create on our site, you can actually share those on Facebook. So we created an application called iRemember. And basically that allows people, I think when we've spoken to a lot of people, a lot of genealogists, one of the main concerns and challenges that they had is they just can't get their family interested in this. And so rather than trying to get, you know, your whole family over into Footnote, we thought, well, let's just take Footnote to where all those families are. And basically now it will import those pages into a nice application that is in a format where, you know, all of the rest of your family is familiar with using and is constantly on there in most cases, you know, communicating with each other. And so, again, that's one way that we've taken a look at and said, what's a way that we can, you know, broaden this and get this out to the people where, you know, they can start talking about this and sharing and collaborating. And so that Facebook has actually been a very exciting project to where you can, you know, share with your family. And, again, for a younger generation that's really on
there
Facebook.
There you go.
It's a way that, you know, for, you know, grandma or grandpa or even mom or dad to get their family to even look at this information, which has been a struggle for some people in the past, and puts it in a very fun and engaging way where they could even just share their memories or anything that they might have, and again, that all coming together.
Have you seen, basically, I mean, I don't know what your demographics are, but, you know, as the Internet, as genealogy kind of, you know, skyrockets on the Internet, have you seen the demographics of people interested in doing their genealogy start to change a little bit and become a little younger?
You know, not as much. I think what we have seen is that the demographic that is, you know, kind of characterized as doing genealogy is getting more and more comfortable with using, you know, this type of technology. And so I think we're seeing that group actually grow. I'm not seeing as much of a shift to a younger audience. You know, I think that they might have a little bit of passing interest, which sometimes is a great thing and sometimes can spark them. But I think what we're seeing is more and more people, you know, baby boomers especially, I think as they start getting into that time of their life where things are slowing down a little bit and then the noise in their life is starting to dissipate a little bit, that they're starting to get into this as well. So we're seeing it shift a little bit younger, not too much younger, but I think that, you know, this Facebook application that we launched is very new, and it would be very interesting to see how that actually might change the way that young people actually engage and access family history. So we're hoping to change that as well, and it's a little early in the game, but we'll be keeping our eye on it and see if that moves the needle a little bit with that group.
Right. Now, one of the things, too, on your site that's a little different than some other sites is that you put the data up in phases rather than waiting for it to all be complete. Is that correct, or is that just
What we'll do is once we start a collection, we would like to get the information out to the public as soon as possible. But I think the key in that is really communicating how much has really been completed and that we're still working on it. So whenever we start a collection, we work hard to making sure that that gets completed. And you'll notice that on our site, if you go to, you know, the original document section, there will be a status bar, and it'll show you the type, the percentage that is has been completed. So we've got some on there that we just started. A good example is Civil War pension files. Now, the pension indexes are out on our site as well as some other site, but the pension files have never been microfilmed. And so we are actually out at the National Archives digitizing the paper documents, and we're slowly putting those up on the site. It goes a lot slower than just digitizing microfilm. But
sure,
that's one of those new collections that we thought, you know what, we just, as soon as we get this information, we really got to get it out there so that you know, people will be able to access that. So that's been kind of the mind frame, and then we want to make sure people understand where we are in the process and know that we're going to continue to work for that. So if somebody came to the site and searched on those Civil War pension files and didn't find anything, well, if they were to look at the status and say, oh, okay, well, they have only 2 or 3% of that completed, I probably should come back and make sure to check again, because I know that they're still working on it. And
right,
that way we hope that, you know, we can get more information out to everyone and have them access it as soon as possible.
Now, on the particular project documents, is there any way that you could sign up for being alerted when new information came online, or is that a little bit too complicated since things are monthly?
No, that's actually, there's a few ways that you can actually do that. Now, if you were to, if you were interested in, say, a collection that had just recently been released but was very new and didn't have a lot of content, you can go to what we call as the title page for that collection. And
okay,
there's a watch button, and you'll find the watch button in a number of places on our site. Simply by clicking that will then allow you to receive notifications when anything changes on that. If you just simply sign or register on our site for free, we have emails that go out every month that gives an idea of what's new from a content perspective and what's coming up. And then, again, there's a way to watch information on our site just simply clicking the watch buttons, and that will actually send a notification to you when things are changing on the site.
And I guess it would behoove us to give the exact URL, even though we keep saying footnote.com, but the exact URL for footnote.com is www.footnote.com. If you want to follow some of the conversation that we're having here and watching, you know, one of the things that kind of piqued my interest in the Texas Birth Index, because it was that index 23 years ago that I had to go to Waco, Texas, to my great-grandfather's brother's daughter, which was the big lead that told me where my family came from in Lithuania. And up until that point, absolutely nobody in my direct line had a clue. Or if they did, they certainly weren't telling us. And her birth record had the birthplace of her father. When I looked, it's 53% complete, and Waco's not done yet. So, the amount of legwork that some of us have put in over these years, both in transportation and copies and things like that, is pretty much going to be going away here pretty quick. It's simply amazing. Now,
wow,
most of these collections, you are doing those in house. You don't have volunteers or anything working on them, or.
Well, it's twofold. Actually, the those records that I was referring to, those paper records, are actually being. They're volunteers that are actually working on that out of the National Archives.
Okay.
And so we do that, but most of it is actually done in-house. So we have a bunch of scanners here at our own location where we have those images. So we receive the microfilm or the microfiche from whether it be the National Archives or Allen County Public Library or other archives, and we digitize those in-house and have that whole imaging done here at our place.
Okay. So really, the big thing is, in my opinion, is, you know, for people who are really interested in getting involved or are involved, is to, you know, really begin to share as much information as they can in as many places as they can. I, you know, I see the world, you know, opening up and everybody having a different take on you know what's available, and I think it's very important. Just as people look at things, you know, everywhere on the internet, that all the companies that are, you know, involved in genealogy, that we need to, you know, pay attention to. I mean, you can't just limit yourself to one anymore, and you know, you just never know what you're going to find. As far as your collections are concerned, what would you say is the most interesting collection that may have probably information that you would least expect?
That's a great question. There's actually two that I would probably mention that we're surprised at how valuable it was to genealogists, but one of them happens to be, these are just kind of examples. Well, one was we have the FBI case files from 1908 to 1922 on our site, and it was known at that time as the Bureau of Investigations, the mm-hmm. BOI. And I don't think, again, genealogists would probably think, oh, I you know, might find something in there. But the fact of the matter is that there have been a lot of people finding information about their ancestors. And I've even looked at some examples. And going in there, you could either find where there might be some prohibition investigations or German case files is a big section of that, where you know, if you had German ancestry that were in the United States at that time, a lot of Germans were being investigated because the paranoia was so high at that time during around the World War I era. And but people have been able to find where there will be testimonials, and in fact, there's an example of a record saying, you know, I'm John Smith, I'm 23 years old, I live at 355 Maple Lane, my mom's name is Frances, she lives four blocks down from me, I'm a grocer. It's that kind of information from an interviewing standpoint that really provides a lot of, not only the vital information, you know, with a birth date and a birthplace, things of that type, but, you know, information about what they were doing at the time, where they lived, their occupation. And, we'll find that also there's another collection we have called the Southern Claims. This is from the Civil War time period, and it ends up being that those people that were living in the South that were loyal to the Union Army were being, they were able to get compensated for things that might have been taken from them during the war. So if an army came through and had taken a bunch of barrels of pork or some tools or whatever it might have been, if you were able to prove that you were a loyalist to the Union Army, you were able to get that compensation. And so, again, it's a record that actually has information about, you know, who they were, what they were doing, has testimonials from neighbors to validate that, hey, they were loyalists and at the time. And so, again, another collection that you wouldn't think of, but mm-hmm. actually has some valuable information about that. So, and those are just a few examples of some of the collections that that we have on there. So we're branching out beyond just maybe census or birth or marriage death records, and we're putting these type of records on there that people really can find some valuable information.
Yep, and I actually did find something in the FBI files that was very interesting, and as you mentioned, it was a German resident, and they were questioning his loyalty to the United States, or lack of loyalty, or to the Third Reich, and it was very interesting to read. Sometimes I will tell you that it sometimes, you know, when you're searching for something and you start getting into some of these records and some of these files, that you tend to get lost for hours. That seems to be something that happens to me. I did, this particular person was not related, at least to my knowledge, to what I was looking for, but I got very, very intrigued with some of the information. I'm actually working with someone on a case now where the Southern Claims might just have something, because we've brick-walled this one to death, and I would venture to say that some of these collections that you have may indeed be where to look when you can't find people in the normal places in the census records, or you know, where the birth and death records don't exist, you know, or prior to the time that, that births and deaths were recorded in certain places, that there may indeed be a wealth of information that, you know, you can't find anywhere else. So that's pretty exciting. How many collections do you have if you go and count all these titles?
Oh,
that's
the titles
idea
that we have on there. Boy, that's a good question. Well,
yeah.
It's a hard question to answer because the fact that we have historical newspapers and in small town newspapers on there, and so you get into the hundreds and hundreds of different what we call titles that were on there. I would imagine that that's a great question. It's just gotten to be, if you go to the original, there's an original documents link on the homepage at the top, and it'll show you alphabetized how many of those are on there, and it just continues to grow quite a bit. But so I don't have a specific number, but it's growing pretty quickly. And
so let's talk a little bit about the historical newspapers and the small towns. What kind of examples might there be?
Well, we've got everything from one of the most popular newspapers that we have is the Chicago Tribune.
Okay.
So you've got the big newspapers, but you'll find that these small town newspapers that we have, and it's kind of a spattering of different towns and from different time periods that we have represented on there, but they really give some good information, not only from a local standpoint, but a lot of times those small town newspapers would feed the main wire news that was coming through, and so they will have, you know, kind of those big events that were happening. I should mention that we just signed a partnership with Gannett, and we just announced that last month. Now, Gannett happens to be the largest newspaper publishing company in the United States, and so we are working together with them on digitizing their historical newspapers. We just started with Florida Today and the Poughkeepsie Journal up in New York, and what was kind of surprising to us. We were doing that because of the anniversaries of Woodstock and the moon landing, and those were the newspapers that were in those proximities. But the Poughkeepsie Journal surprised us because that's one of the oldest, longest-running newspapers in the United States. It goes back all the way to the 1700s. So we're going to have a full run of that particular newspaper from the 1700s all the way up. And so that, from we've already got some great newspaper content on the site. But I think that's just the beginning. With this new partnership, and Gannett's been fantastic to work with, there's some great content that they have that we're now going to be able to work together with them and putting that up on the Internet and having people interact with that content as well. So that's going to be, and as his family historians know, newspapers can just provide unbelievable amount of information, whether it be a story about a person or an obituary, even photos, and also just giving that context of what was life like for my ancestors wherever they were living at the time. They're just one of the most popular collections on our site, and that's just going to continue to grow.
And, you know, and that is true for the researcher, and I might point that out. I've been working with a client on a real dead-end case, and it's the newspaper articles so far, and we've been able to locate several of them in Galveston, which I live about 18 miles away, that has really led us to some information of putting people in particular places, even though we can't find them in census records anywhere. But, in between census records, we are finding them in stories of being witnesses to shootings or, you know, things like that. And they're just, pretty amazing. And there's also, another client I was working with where a newspaper article, there was the story of the family went that the individual had lost his arm in a mining accident. And because of a historical newspaper, we were able to find that that was not the case, but that he was shot at close range in the arm when a fire emerged in the little town, and he was trying to protect the street that he and his brother-in-law had their stores, and they had to amputate. So it's, so the stories that get passed down, sometimes the only verification that you may have is in a newspaper article. It's really mind-boggling to me what we're able to find these days. It is mind-boggling, and it's also quite fun. I'm sure your background in genealogy is that, you know, basically what we do as genealogists, not only for a personal, I guess, spiritual reason. I mean, there's a reason that people are out there, you know, constantly, you know, looking for something. It's really like being a private investigator, except you're looking for dead people most of the time. And tracing dead people back to the 1600s in Virginia is, you know, quite an interesting task in upon itself, into the early days of America. And then, you know, my experience going back into, really 18th and 19th century in Eastern Europe, and Europe has, been amazing. And, you know, to see the amount of information that people are able to, come up with, just based on little bitty stories that are passed down is, pretty exciting to me. I don't know. I guess you have to really be into it to really see the value of it. But, you know, understanding and knowing where you come from, and understanding and knowing more about the lives of those that deceased you, in my opinion, really gives you a really clearer picture of who you really are. And the more you understand, the more you understand yourself. It's been an amazing journey for me, and my goal is to try to share this journey with as many people who will go along with it anyway. As far as, I can certainly appreciate, what you're able to talk about and what you're not. But on the newest things, you mentioned Gannett, anything else that's been announced recently?
We just actually, as of today, opened up the. We have the 1930 census record on our site. We just opened that up free to the public for this month, So they can simply just go to the homepage, footnote.com. There'll be a little banner there at the bottom, and all you need to do is just register for free, and you'll have access to that entire database for the month of August. And that was just a means of really getting more people exposed. The 1930 census is one of the better databases to search if you're just new, because there's a really high potential or chance that you're going to find somebody in there, one of your ancestors. And it's kind of like what you were alluding to. There's this sense of self that is fulfilled when you find more information about. And when we met with people and talked about, that drive that they have, they describe it as almost having a sickness. They caught the bug, and it really got them hooked to where they, were so interested in this, and it was driving them, and they loved the thrill of the hunt. We wanted to open up the 1930 census in hopes that more people could catch that bug and, find that first bit of information about an ancestor, and then hopefully that will lead them to different venues where they could discover more and more things. And so that's, what we just announced today. We just launched a press release out announcing that if you just go to Footnote, you'll have access to that database. And it's also a means to get, family and friends involved, too. So if you're already into family history and may have already researched the 1930 census, it's great to, let family and friends know, hey, there's something here that you might want to, you might want to look at. Here's Grandpa's census record. You can see that, this is where he lived, and here is some information about his education and occupation or whatever it might be. And it sometimes only takes just a little bit, and then people catch the bug and they can go. So that would be, something that we wanted to mention today. We have some big announcements that'll be happening probably at the end of September. And,
okay.
We have some other big collections that are launching in November. So I can't go into too many details, but they're really exciting. They're probably, and again, this is all content that really has has never been on the internet before, and will help a lot of people with their family history, and we're just really excited about it. And so I would kind of, as a teaser, just put that out there just to say stay tuned, and we'll be making some of those announcements here in the near future. And but keep coming back to the site. We're adding more and more content, and it just gets better and better. And who knows, you might find something out of somebody else's shoebox that we had nothing to do with. It's just that's where they decided to put it, and that could also be a great gold mine for people to find.
Yep, and also, too, since the 1930 census are open, it's a good time to register and get on the mailing list so that you can be kept abreast of all the new things that are going on. And I want to make interject something, too, about the 1930 census. You know, when people start their genealogy, they tend to try to start with their earliest ancestor. And that's kind of, not really the best way to approach it. And the 1930 census really allows people to begin with records that are of the later generation, so that they can begin to work backwards. And, having been involved in Jewish genealogy for as long as I have, I've seen so many people say, well, my family came from Warsaw, Poland, and immediately they start going to Warsaw and trying to find records, but they hadn't traced them here in the United States. And, what sometimes happens is there were so many districts and gubernias and areas around these major cities that, the people would refer to these gubernias, and family members would assume that that was the town, and that was not the case. So, working backwards is really one of the better ways to skin a cat in doing genealogy. So having these records available, and especially to beginners now, is the great place to start. And I will tell you, too, that one of the things that I've noticed with Footnote is that your indexing is different than other people's. And I've actually found census records on your site that I have not been able to find on someone else's. And, it's an interesting thing. I'm real curious, too, as to how you guys, are doing your indexes. I'm just curious because I've searched, several places with the same census records, and it only came up on yours.
Yeah, sometimes that'll be the indexes. Sometimes it's the search technology that is present on different websites. Sometimes they'll have algorithms that they look at things differently. So it can be a combination of both things. We try to get as much information. It's a very interesting balance that you need to make on how much information you really do index versus how much cost you can incur and how much time it'll take. And so we try to make a good balance to where people can find the important information on there and make that useful. But at the same time, we try to keep it to where we're not going to drive the cost through the roof, and making sure this is affordable for everybody. And so it's sometimes that plays a role on the decisions we made. The Revolutionary War pension files is a good example. We decided to basically index all the names that we found in there. And that's been extremely valuable for people because they're finding ancestors in pension files that's not even their pension file. They just ended up being mentioned or had a testimonial in that particular file. So, there are times where we decide let's go into this a little bit heavier and index this a little bit more because we know there's additional people in here. And then there's other times where it just makes sense to just do kind of the high-end information to where it would make it findable for most people.
Well, I just found that so very interesting. And, if you were doing research, where would you say the records would be the most top-heavy for the particular type of researchers? Would you, for example, if you have, if you're researching Virginia, West Virginia in the 1700s, would this be a good place? Or mm-hmm. I'm just trying to get an idea for in a general point of view, that
maybe where our strengths lie. Yeah, we're for the most part we're American records. We're trying to get some international records, but we're still in that process. So for the most part, we're going to be right here in the United States. And I would say that as it relates to military records, we're probably one of the strongest, if not the strongest, on the internet for military records as it relates to everything back from the Revolutionary War, Civil War, even up to, you know, World War II, World War I, and even the Vietnam War.
Okay.
So I would say that we're probably the strongest as it relates with military records, but again, historical newspapers, like we mentioned before, city directories, and naturalization records, which we're not, we haven't seen on very many other sites. We've got millions of naturalization records on there, and those end up being just a fantastic resource of information that for your particular ancestor when they were getting naturalized. And so
sure.
Those are kind of the focuses. But I mean, we go all the way back until you know, we even have records into the 1600s, the early colonization records, and things of that type, and again, all the way up to even the Vietnam War, but that tends to be where our focus has been at this particular point, and that has comprised quite a bit of effort and a lot of records already for just that that small time frame there.
You know, I was reading a will from the late 1600s, early 1700s last night, and I actually thought I was going to fall out of my chair laughing. I could not hardly believe the way it was written. You know, I leave to my daughter, you know, 1 shilling and no more.
Yeah, there's not only that, there's funny accounts that you find. There's sometimes those skeletons in the closet that families have been trying to hide. Those will sometimes come out with these records. Like you might discover that your great-grandfather was a moonshiner from those FBI case files, or, you know, you never know what you're going to find. And, in fact, that's the whole premise of our site. In fact, that's basically, you go to our homepage, that's exactly what it says. It says, where history will surprise you. And I think that there's just so many things that people do not know about their ancestors. They may know a birth date, they may know of a birthplace, but there's so much more about your ancestors than just the dates and places. They were people. There's stories behind that. There's photos of them. And that's where you can find a lot of this information. Share this information is on Footnote. And I totally agree with you. There's some great stories that are out there that we're hoping people will find and share.
Yep. So, you know, let me kind of go back to the whole sharing thing. If I went on to Footnote, and let's say I found a record of something that belonged to my ancestor. I could
mm-hmm.
take that record and I could literally create a page. Is
yes.
that correct?
Yes.
And so from there, I would then just simply document either through comments or notes something about that particular record. And then how does that end up in your index, I guess, is my question. Maybe
just
I'm getting
all
too
of
technical.
All that information that you basically attach to a document when you're uploading it, when you're adding information, that's all metadata that we basically index off of.
Okay.
And so even if it's you uploaded a photo of an ancestor, and the name of the photo was the name of the ancestor, so it, you know, Uncle Bob, then that, you know, ends up, you know, being added to our search database of where that can actually be searchable. Not only on our site, but on Google. I uploaded some photos, actually quite a bit of photos, of my grandfather who was in World War II. His name is Guido Schroffer. And by going on to Google and you type in Guido Schroffer, the first result is actually an image that I uploaded to the site. And then the second result is actually a footnote page that I created for my grandfather that actually basically is a page that has a little gallery of all the photos that I uploaded and some stories that I've actually included. And, again, it has that timeline and a map. And those are ways that people can, you know, take what's in their shoebox and easily put them into your gallery, which is a, you know, free service, and, you know, create information from that, whether it be a footnote page or just, you know, adding to our search database where people could access it. That's just a very easy, low barrier way to get involved, and it's a really fun way when you can upload a document or a photo onto Footnote and then do all the things that, you know, you can annotate faces on a photo, or you can, you know, add comments or additional insights to maybe a letter that was written during, you know, wartime, something of that effect. You start to see this content that was basically gathering dust all of a sudden start to come to life and become interactive, and that gets really exciting and fun to work with.
And two, you know, the other thing that you mentioned early on that probably we do need to rehash, because, you know, a lot of people say, well, you know, it costs money. You know, if I really want to join, it costs money. And, you know, my answer to most people is, yes, it does, but if you're really serious about what you're doing, it's a whole lot cheaper than getting on an airplane and going to Salt Lake City like we once did, or, you know, getting in a car and driving, you know, 4 hours to a courthouse as we once did. And when you start adding up all the costs that you might spend and the copies, the cost of the copies, lest I forget, you know, at the end of the day, the monthly subscriptions, you know, are minimal. And I don't know if you want to share what your subscription rates are with the audience, and they can certainly get it.
Sure.
I don't have it at the top of my head. But the other thing, too, is, you know, if you do have children in school, you know, how valuable, you know, some of this might be to, you know, as they're studying, to show them some of the records that might exist when they're studying the Revolutionary War, studying the Civil War, studying, you know, World War I, World War II. I mean, I can't see anything more interactive and exciting, and then trying to incorporate, you know, your family and to some of these studies. I mean, this is a pet project of mine, has been for many, many years, that, you know, we need to involve the younger generation. I think the more they see it, the more tender ages, the more they'll have a greater understanding of who they are and where they came from and why they are who they are. And, you know, a lot of the things us baby boomers have gone through, and even the generations before us, and trying to focus on, you know, who are we? You know, we have an opportunity here to make that much easier for the generations coming, you know, behind us. And
absolutely. I think, you know, and I think maybe where we will see a change is the fact that, you know, genealogy before, it's like you described. You basically would go into a library or, you know, some sort of archive, and you'd go through all of this microfilm, and it just was, it's a very, you know, requires a lot of patience and a lot of time and a lot of effort. Well, you know, bringing this information to the Internet is where the younger generations are already interacting. That's how they expect to access content. That's how they expect to access information. Now that we're putting it into that format, you know, we're putting it in a way that they get, that they're comfortable with interacting, and I think that's where you will start to see some of these younger folks start to get a little bit more interested in who they are. You know, you mentioned the historical information that we have on there. I mean, this is, you know, Footnote is in, you know, academic libraries as well as, you know, genealogy libraries as well, and there's just a vast amount of information that is now being, you know, accessed, where instead of turning to 335 in your history book to learn about Thomas Jefferson, well, on our site you can actually read his letters in his own handwriting. And, you know, when you do that, it has a different type of reaction when you can see a letter written by your grandfather or by a historical figure. You know, seeing that original document is what makes a huge difference, and I think that's where you will start to see some changes. Going back to your question about the memberships, we, you know, this process of, you know, digitizing and indexing and hosting, you know, over 58 million images and adding a million more a month, that, you know, that does have a cost to it. It has a fairly big cost to it. But what we try to do is, yeah, and we, you know, to be honest with you, we understand that we may just be one tool in your tool belt. and that you might have other sites or other software that you are using in order to, you know, conduct this research. So we try to keep our prices as low as possible. The regular price for an annual membership is $79 for the entire year. We are running a special right now. If you go to the homepage, it's $20 off of that membership. So you can get in for, you know, $59 for the entire year. Now, we also have, you know, monthly memberships that you can get into for just $11.95. And, you know, in putting it in contrast, like what you said, you know, $11.95 is going to be about the amount of, you know, your coffee and your parking that you were going to have to buy anyway just to go down to a library. But now you have that, you know, where you can access that from your own home, you know, for that time period. So it really, we've tried to keep the prices in check. Now, I should mention that the paid membership is only to access the documents that Footnote has digitized.
Okay.
Anything else that people have, that members have contributed, whether it be documents or photos or anything else, and all of our indexes are always going to be free. So where on other sites, sometimes part of the index is behind a paywall, we've made all of our indexes completely free. So it really gives you an opportunity to go onto the site and search and look at all the indexed information. It'll give you a good idea of, you know, if we've got the right content for your ancestor. And, you know, so it helps you make the right decision. But, again, there's so many other things, creating pages, uploading to your heart's content, accessing what others have uploaded. All of that stuff is free on the site. And so there's a lot of engagement that you can, you know, do just by simply registering for free. But if you want to see the actual, you know, naturalization record or, you know, maybe one of those FBI case files, you know, that's where it would just require a paid membership. But again, we try to keep that as affordable as possible. And with the cost of, you know, getting copies from archives and everything going up, it just this hopefully will make sense to a lot of people.
And it should. And I mean, and not only from a genealogical perspective, but from a historical perspective and an educational perspective. You know, I mean, I just I see the possibilities, you know, for you know, for that with the you know, school children, just you know, an incredible way to do do projects for school. I mean, it's just really amazing. I mean, you know, we used to have to spend our time in the library, you know, getting books off the top shelf. And you know, now the kids today have some incredible opportunities if we let them know that it's there, you know, for them to do some and you know, incredible stuff and to learn. And
absolutely. We've shown this to school teachers, and their eyes have just kind of popped out of their head. I mean, this is exactly kind of the direction that they've wanted to take. And, you know, you go and visit classrooms nowadays, it has changed quite a bit from when we were in school. Now they have, you know, projectors that are projecting up the computer screens, and there's tons of computer monitors within the classroom. So it has changed quite a bit, and this is the way they are accessing this content. And I think teachers really want them to get in touch with the original source, to interact with that original history, and that's what we provide. So I totally agree with you. I think that this is something that will take off with those schools, and hopefully get the kids engaged in that, and I think it does lead into finding out more about themselves as well.
Yep. That's my mission, Justin. This is my newest mission. I've been on a few in this lifetime. This is my newest one. If you can believe it, our hour is up. So, once again, this has been Justin Schroefer with Footnote.com. www.footnote.com. I'm Sydney King, and my website is www.sydneyking.com. This has been Where Genealogy and Spirit Connect. Next week, a Pulitzer Prize-winning author, Steve Luxenberg. Please stay tuned and join us again.